How do I know what I think until I see what I say?
The Green Notebook, carried by military leaders around the world. Within those pages are sweat, tears, triumphs, and the hard-won lessons of life. Lessons worth sharing. Each week, the team dives into the notebooks of military leaders, business professionals, authors, athletes and coaches, and entertainers to share lessons and help you lead with the best version of yourself.
Today's episode sponsor is Adaton. I got to know the Adaton co-founders, James and JJ, several years ago. They're former Army NCOs who spent years in tech. They know the job firsthand, and they truly listen to service members to learn about today's critical challenges. The Army has always been about the team. Whether in the field, at the motor pool, or wherever they work, troops must collaborate to accomplish their mission. Today, this mission is even more challenging as it extends over wider areas and requires greater information management. Leaders understand that the commander's intent is key to winning in complex environments. And this is where Adaton's flagship product Muster, spelled M-U-S-T-R, comes into play. Muster is a tool that enables commanders to communicate their intent and connect it with action across a distributed formation. Whether you're preparing for an exercise, supporting sponsorship, or coordinating daily operations, Muster serves as a digital knife hand that simplifies complexity. If you're interested in leveraging Muster or learning about what other units are doing with it, reach out to Adaton. For a limited time, listeners of the From the Green Notebook podcast can try out Muster for free. Visit adaton.io/green notebook to get started. That's adaton.io/green notebook. Welcome to another episode of From the Green Notebook. I'm your host, Joe Byerly. And this week, we're diving into the notebook of Lieutenant General Christopher Donahue. This is Lieutenant General Donahue's second appearance on the podcast. I first interviewed him in 2021 as he was completing his first year commanding the 82nd. If you haven't listened to that episode, I encourage you to check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. Well, a lot's happened since our last interview, including the evacuation of Afghanistan, the 82nd's deployment to Poland, Lieutenant General Donahue's promotion, and his assumption of command of the 18th Airborne Corps. So we talk about what he's learned along the way. We discuss culture, leadership, fitness, history, and innovation. You're going to want to listen to this interview a few times because he shares a great deal of wisdom in this episode. So grab your green notebooks and please welcome to the show, Lieutenant General Chris Donahue.
Joe, great to be back and always great to see you.
Great to see you, sir. Last time we talked, I think we went on a year-long adventure together shortly after the interview. The place I want to start is one of the big lessons, takeaways from the last episode, and something that stuck with me in my own organization. When we were talking about what makes a great organization, you said it boiled down to two things, culture and process. And I'm curious, you know, you were about in your second year as commander of the 82nd. How did that continue to play out for you, and then where you're at now in the 18th Airborne Corps?
Yeah, I mean, if you talk to anybody who's really good at running organizations, at some point they're going to bring up culture and process, right? And culture is what your organization does every day. That's the culture, right? Whether you want to be innovative, really disciplined, mentally, physically tough, all of those things, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That's the culture, okay? It's not some banner that's on the wall, right? That looks good and everything else, but culture is what you do every day. Your process is how you develop that culture. That process is how you actually solve problems within an organization. Because if it's just all culture or if it's all process, neither one of them balance out. You have to have both, right? Process carries you through every situation. Culture allows you to look at that process and come up with the right answer depending on whatever those situations are, right? So, and I won't bore you with what we say our culture should be. Everywhere I go, I always put out a one-page document, and I call it who we are. Or in this case, up here at 18th Airborne Corps, I called it America's Contingency Corps, right? And I can share that with you if you want, or both of them. And both of them had a different purpose, but that set the culture. And then we live that culture through that process.
I'm curious, you know, it's very easy for people to say culture and process and do it in garrison when there's a training schedule, there's, you know, a little bit of predictability, but you actually, you know, when the 82nd was called upon for the evacuation of HKIA, how did that play out there when that idea, that theory of culture and process was put to the test?
Yeah, I guess the first thing is, you know, whenever we get activated and we go out there, when we're on the ground there, you know, Admiral Pete Vasely, a dear friend who I have, he'd actually been my boss a couple of different times. He was in charge, okay, and tremendous, tremendous warrior, tremendous leader, incredible respect for Pete. And he had already been, had a team that was on the ground, the Marines, Brigadier General Sullivan, and the, you know, the great Marine Corps team that was out there with us. So they had Abbey Gate and all those positions. So when we came in, we had to very quickly be great teammates to them, right? So Sully was on our flank, and then we reported up to Pete Vasely and his team. So the first thing is, you know, whenever you talk about, whenever you come into a chaotic situation, just make sure that you integrate your team in the right way. And that culture that we wanted everybody, you know, as far as how staffs interact, the three things that I always talk about the culture of the staff is be incredible teammates, be relentless, and be unreasonable, but never, ever violate being a great teammate. And that culture of that staff came in, and we were great teammates with all of them. And oh, by the way, all the other nations that were there, all the other interagency partners and everybody else. And we came in the middle of this pretty dynamic situation, or as you recall, when we landed, that's when you saw that, you know, the Afghans coming onto the airfield. You saw all the clips and everything of, you know, whenever our aircraft opened up, you know, there were people coming on the back, right? So all that was playing out across the formation. And then the other culture that we had was, hey, this is the unbeatable LGOP. And the unbeatable LGOP really means it doesn't matter where we go in the world, we will be better trained, we'll be more fit, and we will take better care of each other, and we will always be in a position of advantage. So all those cultures came together, and that culture helped carry the day with us. Now, ultimately, we were, you know, supporting, you know, Admiral Vasely. We were responsible for our, you know, he wanted to keep the Marines engaged at, you know, Abbey Gate and the other gates that they had because they were doing very good work there. So we reestablished the perimeter, pushed the Taliban out, and then opened our own gates. Okay. And then ultimately all that started to play out. And then they kept adding other tasks to us, right? Hey, you're going to be the people that are going to oversee the final withdrawal there, right? So you had to do basically the exfil of an airfield seizure. You had to oversee all these other contingencies that were going out. So simultaneously, we were running current ops for our portion of the perimeter. And then we were tasked with a number of planning, you know, requirements that came out. And I'm keeping it kind of G-rated because this isn't classified. But the withdrawal, other contingencies. So basically, we were planning five things while running current ops. And if you don't have the right process to do that, being a great teammate, relentless and unreasonable won't carry the day. Right. And oh, by the way, this is August. So year, like you mentioned, year two of command. So all those processes had to see through all that transition that we had. We had a new G3, a new G4, new DCGs. All those things were playing out. Right. But that right culture and process carried us through so that, you know, we could be, you know, ultimately part of a great team that got 142,000 people out. So incredibly proud of the disciplined and everything that happened in our portion of that airhead.
Yeah. And I think it was shortly after that was when my internship in the 82nd began. And I got to see this firsthand when the division deployed to Poland, you know, in preparation for, you know, no one knew at the time, you know, what exactly President Putin was going to do. And I got to see the same things kind of play out, the same things that you're talking about. Quickly establishing a battle rhythm, quickly putting in processes in a place that could create a common operating picture against not just the soldiers, but, you know, the interagency as well. And so I think that was like one of the key lessons that I took with me. It was like going back to balancing the culture. It's what processes do you have in play to facilitate that outcome?
You know, General Cavoli in particular, you know, we'd been talking to him since, you know, the spring the previous year about what could potentially play out. You know, so we did a number of training exercises out in Europe that allowed us to start to introduce capabilities like Starlink. And there's a number of other ones that we started to use, right, to allow us to be successful later on. And then that fall, prior to deploying after Christmas, using our operational readiness cycle, right, a process, we prepared all the units that were going to go out there. We made sure that we integrated in all of the brand new counter UAS capability that's being used very effectively by 210 out there. Command post exercises, how to have smaller command posts, all those things we were going through the training to make sure that we were prepared, which initially we thought would be a NEO mission and then turned around to be, you know, ultimately support of Ukraine. But all those same processes of how you problem solve, right? So that culture of innovation, of being relentless, unreasonable, and great teammates allowed us to integrate and adapt new capabilities at, as you witnessed, you know, at an extremely fast rate, right? And then ultimately see the results, which I won't get into, but, you know, very effective, okay, culture and process.
I want to talk a little bit about culture too, because I just, like, I saw things that I've tried to take with me into my current job. And, you know, one of those was like getting on the ground, talking to soldiers, you know, when you were the division commander, explaining why we were there, what we were doing. And it wasn't the first time that you met those soldiers as a division commander. You had worked out with them a couple different times because you were bringing squads up to you to show them a way to do functional fitness. And it was when the division was really getting into testing out concepts for holistic health and fitness. And so how important is it for leaders to get out there and, you know, to PT, to work out with their people? And then I guess, like, why is that so important?
A couple of things. One, as a commander or any leader, right, you have to figure out how much time do I go out and be present so you understand reality, okay? How much time do you actually spend looking at current operations? And how much time do you spend looking at future operations? Now, I kept that kind of basic, right? But that's really where you have to manage your time. And anywhere you go, this goes back to process, right? It has to be very, very deliberate, very precise. So I knew that as the 82nd commander, with all the demands that you have on you, the one time every day that is dedicated that I get to be present with my incredible paratroopers in the case of the 82nd, okay, and have the, you know, the joy and the fun of being with them was PT. But then also what we all forget is the importance of PT itself. We do PT for four reasons. The first is to prepare for combat, right? This goes back to being unbeatable. You're so physically fit, you can run any adversary into the ground, outwill and outlast them. That's why we do PT. The second reason is, as a leader, you prove to your subordinates, hey, trust me with your life. I can plan anything. PT is really easy to plan. We do it every day, same time. Trust this plan that we have. It's going to make you better. Because they will also then trust that you could make a plan for something much more complex that's going to lead to potentially their life, death, and success or not of the operation. So that's why those things that come together are so important with those first two things, right? Prepare for combat and prove to them that you know, build that trust. And then the third is, if you're in the United States Army, you're going to be around the greatest people you ever be around. Get to know them. It's incredible what all you learn. But also, you teach everybody too, of like, if you really know each other, then every day, right, you should know right away if something's not quite clicking with one of your, you know, peers, subordinates, whoever, right, friends, doesn't matter. You should know right away. And that's why being present is so important, right? You get to know each other and you get to know what's going on. You also get to celebrate all the great stuff that's going on, right? So just that ability to know and be with them every day. And then the last thing is, we don't make people resilient, then the 82nd or now 18th Airborne Corps. We use PT to make people better, stronger, right? We're constantly getting better. We're constantly getting stronger. So those are the four reasons why we do PT every day. Prepare for combat. Prove to them that you got two hands on the wheel. Trust me with your life in combat. I got this. I can plan something very easy like PT. And we get to know each other. Greatest group of people you're ever going to be around. And then the last is we're going to get better, right? We're going to hold each other accountable. There is no rank in the LGOT. There is no rank in the Army when you're doing PT. Donahue, do the rep better. That was an incomplete rep. Do it better, right? A private can tell Donahue, do it right. I can tell the private. It's about accountability. Everything's about accountability. All those things happen every day, right? And you can never, ever squander that opportunity.
I love that. And it's something that I've taken with me. I think I'm on my fourth or fifth iteration doing that, you know, one squad at a time in my own organization. This is the first time I've heard it. You say this in, I guess, over a year and a half now. And I've adapted it myself. And it's, yeah, to prepare physically for combat, to build resiliency. And the third one is to develop trust on your team. And I say it turns PT into a choiceless choice, meaning if you plan it out, if you resource it, if you have it programmed out, if you're not feeling 100% that day, you don't have to worry about what you're going to do. It's written on the board. It's written on the schedule. So it's a choiceless choice. You just execute it. And then they get to know one another, because that is, for me too, that's the 1 hour a day where the pull-up bar, the kettlebell, the assault bike, doesn't care what rank I am or they are. It treats us all the same. And then everywhere else, they call the room to attention and all that. So that's my favorite hour of the day. But I've taken that and adapted it. So I just want to say thanks. I think I've actually talked about it a couple of times on the podcast already, that sacred hour.
The enemy doesn't care what rank you are. They don't care what age you are. They don't care about anything, right? They just know that they want to kill you before you kill them. And again, it's our job with all those things we talked about to make sure that we do that to our adversaries.
On talking about the enemy, warfare has changed. Warfare has advanced in the last couple years. I guess, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing in 18th Airborne Corps now with innovation? And then maybe backing up a little bit, how do you think warfare is changing now? And what are some of the challenges you think we're going to face right now and in the next few years?
I think the first thing is, I'll make this pretty quick. You were at that inflection point, right? Very similar to prior to World War II, when FM radio came in and allowed us to do combined arms battle. In other words, link, you know, planes, tanks, dismounted forces, artillery, et cetera. It's now that way with data, right? Only you couple in, you now have unbelievable transport layers. You now have things like the integrated tactical network, these new mission command systems that we're using that you can now see everything because of data that's out there. Okay, you can link things now much easier. So you can, commanders can make decisions much faster. And whoever really kind of harnesses this ability will get a decisive advantage. And the ability to adapt and integrate these capabilities is going to drive who has the advantage. Okay, so what are we doing? Well, at the core level, we're making sure that, you know, we have a mission command system that we can now fight at depth and start to set the conditions for divisions, right? And we've seen that start to play out. At the division level, obviously, we've now, with, you know, pending decisions that are out there, we've changed the structure of the division, okay? And we're making sure that at the division level, we can set conditions for a brigade. And at the brigade combat team level, at least within the IBCTs, we're going through a series of pilots right now to make sure that we are organized the right way based off of, you know, what is playing out across the world. And to be specifically, what is, you know, the traditional forms of mass, mortars, artillery, you know, artillery and mortars are still the number one killer in almost any battlefield of, you know, large scale type things, right? Ukraine, not talking coin, but those type of fights. So the number one killer in Ukraine, artillery and mortars, right? But you have these new forms of mass that are helping set the conditions for artillery, mortars, et cetera, right? The ability to maneuver or not. So when you integrate all that together in these new forms of mass, both ground, air, even water, when you're looking at some of these things playing out. So we've built a new IBCT that can use all the traditional forms of mass, get a new network that can pass data, and then incorporate these new forms of mass to include electromagnetic. And we're piloting all that right now. And at the division level, how do you amass all this new capability, these new systems, new information, and make sure that you can task organize across your brigade combat teams and bring all these capabilities to bear to make it an unfair fight? Then again, at the core level, you know, massing all that data to make sure that you are now attriting your adversary and setting the conditions at every echelon. So from that core kind of JTF level, the division level, and brigade, really, really neat stuff. And then what we're doing with the brigade separates as well, so that secret sauce of a core level is really amazing how they are also transforming.
You know, as we're making all these transformations, do you think it will require anything differently? Like when things are speeding up, you know, now that we augmented decisions with AI tools, any like different traits, attributes for leaders when it comes to decision-making or leading?
I don't know if it's new traits or anything. I think they've always been there, right? You know, if you read Clausewitz or, you know, you go back to the 300, the ability to adapt and integrate is always extremely important whenever you're up against someone who's trying to kill you, right? Because they adapt and integrate, you adapt and integrate. And you got to stay ahead of them. That goes back to culture and process too, don't forget. But having said all that, I don't know if you need new traits or attributes. What you do have to do is you have to educate yourself more. That's the real key thing, right? You know, General Miller talks about leaders don't arrive. You're constantly looking. You're professionally curious. You're constantly looking for that new advantage so that you were prepared to outwit, outthink, outadapt, outintegrate your adversary and make it as unfair a fight as possible. So like right now, everyone's talking about data. Well, if you don't already really understand data right now, if you don't already really understand cloud, compute power, all these things that you know, everyone throws out, you're way behind. That was 5 years ago. You need to catch up. And the only person that's responsible for that is you, the individual, right? Draw a circle around your own feet and start preparing for what is your current world. And then to your point, AI and all these other things into the future are going to be extremely important, and you better start understanding them.
I've noticed too, I've started using AI tools even with my writing, just to help do quick edits. And I'm learning that if you don't have the material down ahead of time, like if you don't understand the subject matter, it's going to make changes to it or recommend changes that are absolutely wrong. And so I almost think too that it puts even more onus on us to study warfare, to study systems so that we are able to catch those errors and not make, you know, bad decisions just because a computer told us, you know, the probability of something happening was high.
Right. And the only thing it should help us with is at this point is gain better understanding and gain a look into different options that we did not think of. And again, I'm keeping it kind of, you know, G-rated right now because we're using, when you look at MDMP, right, this is the area where they can really help staffs, okay? But if you don't have that fingertip understanding, that depth of understanding, it'll give you a bad answer, right? So that way you can throw it off. But it can do all kinds of things for you. But again, at the end of the day, you as the commander or primary staff officer, you own that information. It's not a... You know, everyone talks about ChatGPT. You know, we're using all kinds of large language models and everything, but the ChatGPT, if you tell it to write you a paper on something like George Washington, that's pretty easy. But whenever you wanted to start solving a difficult problem, like how do you solve this crisis? Oof, it may give you something, but it also may give you some really bad ideas.
Over the last 4 years, I've developed a morning ritual of reading, writing, and reflection. But before I do any of that, I brew a hot cup of my favorite coffee, Alpha Coffee. They make premium 100% Arabica coffee, and Alpha has some of my favorite blends. They have Dawn Patrol, which is a nice medium light breakfast blend. I also enjoy Charlie Don't Surf, which is a medium Kona blend. And when I go to the field for training, Alpha comes with me because they also make K-Cups and they make instant coffee too. You've got to try their Seven Summits instant coffee. Not only do they have great coffee, they're a great veteran-owned business who has shipped over 22,000 bags of coffee to deployed troops. They also offer a 10% discount to members of the military and first responders. You can find a link to their website in the show notes, so go check them out and make Alpha Coffee part of your morning ritual and taste the alpha difference. I'm watching the clock. I'm trying to hit you on your greatest hits in our short amount of time together. I want to shift focus completely from what we were just talking about. I want to freak up on you and I want to talk about communication, especially, you know, communicating up and communicating down. Could you talk about the importance of that for leaders?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you as the commander, that is probably the number one thing that you should do. So the first thing is prior to you taking command of a formation, the first thing is, like I said, I always put out a simple one-page thing, right? When it was in the 82nd, it was who we are. And the topic of that was very relevant because of where we were as a formation based off of a bunch of stuff going on. And then here in 18th Airborne Corps is the exact same reason, right? So the title of that was America's Contingency Corps. But then you go down through and you lay out your expectations. Extremely important that you do that. And then everybody should get it. And it should be clear cut. And then make sure that you're using your annual training guidance, right? That annual training guidance is extremely important to tell people what your expectation is. But don't take what your boss gave you and regurgitate it. Like, I can tell you this, in 18th Airborne Corps, the standard is that you will fight for 14 days in sustained combat, and the preponderance of the fighting we do will be at night. And then everything else kind of goes out of that. So how you care for your people, how you prepare for combat, what you innovate, everything comes out of that. And everybody should know that. Just how you're going to do that as a commander. And then the other portion of this is how do you, you know, communicate across formations? How do you communicate down into your organization? And then also, how do you communicate with your boss? I would tell you, whenever I take over a job, no matter how well I know the person, I'll ask them, hey, sir, ma'am, how do you want me to communicate to you? What about CCIR? What about this? What about that? Right. So I went from, you know, two completely different bosses who wanted information differently for different reasons, right? But it's my job to adapt to them. Lower communicates to higher, not the other way around. And then I'll routinely ask, you know, I'm going to see General Pappas here in a little bit. Hey, sir, am I communicating well with you? Am I getting you everything you need? Am I surprising you on anything? You know, and when it's one-on-one, they'll give you that good feedback, right? In a big group, they may or may not, just to make sure you do that. And then the other thing too, it's very important to communicate is during crisis or something happens. Okay. Anytime something happens, right? There's an accident, something big happens just in everyday life, and your subordinate calls you up. Okay. Trust me, they don't want to call you with that information. Whenever they're calling you up, no matter how bad it is or anything else, understand number one, it's a first report, and we all know that won't be accurate. But more importantly, just say, hey, you know, in this case, Joe, I got it. Thank you. First report. What help do you need? Right? Just ask them that simple question. What help do you need? They may say, I don't know. I'll get back to you, or I need this, or I need that. And just say, hey, I'm going to stay in touch with you. And then once you get that and you pass that up to your boss, right? Make sure that you're setting the conditions for whatever has to play out. Hey, they've had this situation. This is what we're doing on the medical side. This is blah, 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 right? Let them know, hey, I got it. Let's give everybody a little bit of time and space to be able to deal with the situation. Trust me, the military or wherever you are in the world, everybody in the world will investigate it and worry about all that stuff later and all the right lessons learned and everything else will happen. And that first report and those first couple hours, nobody needs to worry about that. Every safety organization, everybody else in the world will swarm down there and make sure that all those right things happen. But let's just take a breath. What help do you need? And that goes back to your culture too. I got both hands on the wheel. I can handle anything that's happening, right? That's so, so critical.
I want to pull on that just a little bit. So I want to get like super explicit with this because I think it's really important. So if you're my boss and I call you and I tell you, hey, sir, we just had a rollover. What's the first question you do not ask?
Were they wearing their seatbelt? Does it matter? Everything in the world, we will figure that out. What help do you need? Trust me, everybody will know whether or not they're wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah.
At any time.
That's awesome, sir. And I
Don't get me wrong. You need to wear your seatbelt. Okay. I've been in vehicles that have rolled over. Everybody damn near, you know, my age who's still in the Army, you've been IED'd, you've been all that stuff. Seatbelts save you. You ever want to know why to wear a seatbelt? Talk to Tony Thomas, General Tony Thomas. He'll tell you why to wear a seatbelt in a second. Okay. Very dangerous driving. But at that moment, it doesn't matter. I got it. Calm, flatliner. What help do you need? Right? All that stuff will sort out.
That's great advice. And what help do you need? And is everybody okay? So important. Well, as we get close to the end, I've got to ask you, are you reading anything now? Have you read anything that's just kind of sticking with you, that's driving some of your ideas?
Yeah, I'm actually in, you know, Sean, I'm always reading stuff, right? So I'm not going to tell you everything I'm reading, okay, for a couple of different reasons, but here's the one I will leave you with is the Pacific Trilogy, okay? And the other one I'm reading about, actually another really good book right now, is one on Nimitz, okay? Nimitz was an amazing leader, okay? Amazing. And, you know, we always, traditionally, you kind of go with your service or, you know, like stuff. But Nimitz, really, really remarkable leader. But then this Pacific Trilogy, the thing I love about the Pacific Trilogy, and I call it the continuum, and me and a Naval War College professor, a guy by the name of Scott Davis, we came up with this concept of how you really should be studying war. And it's called, we call it the continuum. And it really goes into the interwar, pre-war year periods of what are you doing during that time frame? And then how do you go into the war? How do you adapt and integrate and change your goals and strategy and everything to get to where you need to land as a nation, as a coalition? And then what happens after the war? And this book, three books, right, a trilogy, takes you through that continuum out there. And it's the same terrain. The terrain has not changed in the Pacific. Maybe some of the countries have changed a little bit of what people are trying to accomplish. But it's really, really powerful book, in particular, the first and second books, right? The second book's the best. In the third, you kind of know who wins. And, you know, most of us have studied enough that we kind of get all that aspect. But it's about how our military is transformed or not. It's about industrial base. All these things that matter for large-scale combat operations, this book kind of takes you through it. But it's small enough in scope and manner that it really kind of helps you think your way through some of the things that you're challenged with. Really, really neat book. And again, Nimitz, just a neat guy. I've read a couple books about him now.
I appreciate that. I'll add that to my ever-expanding Amazon wish list. Well, I'm looking at the time. We got a few more minutes. I'm going to ask one more question I think is really important. It's something that I'm dealing with a lot now. What advice would you give for younger leaders, specifically officers, but I think it would apply to NCOs too, when it comes to career advice? You know, like a lot of people are like, well, you know, what are people going to think about me if I go this route, if I go that route? Or, you know, what if I go this school? I really want to go do this, but people say that's not a good idea. What advice do you have for them?
I mean, the first thing, the greatest unit you've ever been in is the one you're in, right? And you have to live that every day. You have to own it and you have to drive it every day. That's the first thing. The other thing is you have your path, you have your journey, right? I have a very different path, right, than probably your normal 18th Airborne Corps commander. But when you really look at the paths of all those individuals who, you know, preceded me, there is no set path. You do what you think you need to do. And more importantly, support others that want to do something, okay? No one has ever called me after I left the job and said, you know something, we really need you back. And we should use that and remind that of ourselves too, whenever it's like, hey, well, I really can't let you go. Yeah, you can. Somebody's going to come along that's probably better. Allow change. Allow people to go do what they want to do. And if they don't work, it doesn't work out for them, bring them back to your organization and say, hey, you know something? The guts to try. We always talk about winning matters, trying matters, all these other things, right? You know, let people go out and try to do great things, what they think those great things are, right? You can't harm the organization. They have to do it and, you know, communicate and do it in the right way. but let them go out and do great things. Again, no one has ever called me up after I left the job and said, man, we really need you back. So allow people to go out and spread their wings, do what they want to do, and help them do that. And if it doesn't work out, bring them back.
That's great advice, sir. Well, I'm very cognizant of your time. Thanks for coming back on the show. This was awesome. Part two. This is the first interview you've listened to with General Donahue. I encourage you to go back and listen to the prequel to this one that we recorded 2 years ago. Awesome, awesome advice. Sir, thanks again for your time.
Joe, always a pleasure, my friend. And you know, anytime you know you want to talk about anything, give me a holler, my man, because I always learn something from you.
Thank you. Thank you again for listening to another episode of From the Green Notebook Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps us gain visibility and the opportunity to help more people on their leadership journey. Also, make sure you check out our website at www.fromthegreennotebook.com. There, you can listen to past episodes, read leadership articles written by military leaders from around the world. You can sign up for our monthly reading list email where you can learn about new books that are coming out, and our Sunday reflection email that comes out every Sunday morning. Is really short. It's a 2-minute read, but I guarantee you it's going to start your week off on the right foot. Finally, make sure you follow us on Twitter at FTGNNotebook, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook by searching for From the Green Notebook. Again, thank you so much for coming on this journey with us. I am humbled by the opportunity to learn these lessons alongside you. So please join us next week for another episode of From the Green Notebook, where we're going to help you lead with the best version of yourself. I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand. Oh, I've been running from the law.